We've been in this chaos series for 4 weeks. This is 5th week now. But I'm going to just do a really quick recap because it'll help us to get to where we need to be today. But in week one, we introduced the series and talked about Adam and Eve's decision, which released chaos into God's perfect world. And ever since, God has had this desire to set right what was made wrong by humanity. And then in week two, Jared talked about why bad things happen to good people and why God allows chaos to exist in the world around us. And he introduced us to Geno Steve, who we will never forget. If you missed that, then go back and listen to it, and maybe it might make sense, but it was on a whiteboard. So, yeah, I'm not sure if that will make sense, if that will translate via podcast or not. But anyways, in week three, Carrie talked about generational cycles that existed all throughout the Old Testament, and we went through the Old Testament and looked at some of those cycles that we can identify. And what's funny about those Old Testament cycles is that a lot of those things that happened back then are still happening today. And so she also talked about what sin really is and how we should follow Christ. And that sin is just, the idea of sin is that we're missing the mark. We're missing where we need to be with God in the midst of all of the chaos that is around us. And then last week, we addressed cycles again, and we talked about how we can personally and collectively address personally and collectively address issues that keep us from connecting with God. And so there's all of these things in our lives of pride and hate and jealousy and all of these narcissism and all of these things that keep us from truly connecting with God and living in this state of on target with who God desires us to be. And we talked about, what do we talk about? What do we bring back? The fruits of the Spirit. We brought back the fruits of the Spirit. That's right. And so we talked about how when we're on God's path, we are actually we're showing that fruit of the Spirit in our lives. And it's when we deviate from the fruit, then that's what starts some of these chaotic cycles that we go on and on and on and on. So here we are. We're in week number 5. And we were talking, Carrie was talking last week, and we realized that we have had a lot of conversations about how to break cycles and how to deal with chaos, but we've not addressed the issue of what do we do when we're in the middle of the chaos. So we've talked basically all around this idea, but we've not dealt with the heart of the matter. And so we've talked all about breaking the cycles, but now we want to talk about what does it look like when we're in the middle of the chaos.
So I think it's important to realize that we're going to experience chaos. We're going to experience hard times, things that we can't understand, we can't explain, bad things that happen to good people and yada, yada, yada. Because we live in a broken world, because we live in this imperfect world, there's going to be sorrow, there's going to be pain, there's going to be distress, there's going to be disbelief, doubting. But we don't have to settle in that. We don't have to set up camp. I was talking with a lady a while back. We're going to get way off notes today a lot probably. But a friend of mine, she lost her son to suicide. And it had been a couple years previous. And she, of course, still has really low times. And we were talking about it, and she was like, there's valley days, and there's months that you spend in the valley. And she said, but what I've learned is that it's okay to be in the valley as long as I'm still moving forward. I just can't set up camp and live there. So how do we keep moving forward when we're in the valley? And I think it all comes down to we have to know how to find God while we're in that chaos, when we're in the darkness.
Yeah, and a lot of times when people are telling us things that have happened and they're in the valley, people say things like, we should just pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get on with it. Or when you fall off the horse and you get bucked off the horse, you got to get right back on it. And there is some wisdom into some of these sayings. But sometimes bad things happen in our lives, and we have these status where we are in this darkness. But the reality is that a lot of times as Christians, we just encourage other Christians by saying, like, it's going to be okay. Like, just give God the glory, and everything's going to be fine, and just worship him till you break through, and like all these things. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with those generic sayings, but what we want to talk about today is the idea or the concept of that it's okay for you to be in lament. It's okay for you to spend a minute in that darkness and ask some hard questions. So this week's has been pretty wild for us, right? Between work and teaching and school and all these things. My truck broke down, so I didn't have it all week, and it was in the shop getting fixed. So we were down to one car. And then Carrie started feeling bad, and we thought her insides had exploded, and we did all these tests, only to find that it was a roofing disease called shingles. And so she was in a lot of pain. And then I went to go get her medicine at the pharmacy, and then her car, I just put tires on it last week, and there was a flat tire on the way to the pharmacy. And it was on the interstate, and so, like, there were truckers driving by honking at me. And I'm, like, standing there with my tiny little thing to fix the jack. Not the jack, but the tire wrench thing. And I was just like, "Wah!" like, yelling at the trucker, because that's all I had. Like, he's honking at me, and I'm just like, "Wah!" you know, like, just angry. And so, like, all of these crazy things are happening, and we're, like, I don't know about you, but I was frustrated. Like, come Friday, I was just frustrated. I was tired, I was worn out, I was just angry. And here's the thing, it was okay for me to be in that state. Like, there were crazy things that were happening, and it was okay for me to be there. And as much chaos has happened in our house, I know that there are people in this room who have dealt with even more chaos than what we have in the past week or the past month or the past year. So what do we do in these moments? Do we just suck it up and keep on moving? Like, what do we do when these things happen? So let's turn to Scripture and see how we deal with difficult times.
So there's this amazing book in the Bible called Lamentations. And the entire book's kind of a discussion of how we can respond to God when bad things happen. It's not a real upper, but it is a big encouragement. In the book of Lamentations, it was written after 500 years of history. In the summer of 587 BCE, the city of Jerusalem fell to Babylon and everything was lost. So we have the promised land that we worked so hard to get to, and now it's gone. It's been trampled underfoot. This gift that God gave to the people of Israel, and it's gone. They're lost. They're confused. They don't know where to go from here. They don't understand why. So the book of Lamentations is a memorial to the pain and confusion that the Israelites had following the destruction of their beloved city. So, like, for example, imagine losing, like, Washington, D.C. to another country that is just taken over. And imagine that, like, or whatever's relevant in your mind, or, you know, someone comes and takes over Clarksville, because this is definitely the place where people would come and take over. So imagine what that would feel like. So we're going to read Lamentations 3.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay. The whole chapter.
The whole chapter. All right, buckle up, because it's a roller coaster, y'all. I am the man who has seen affliction. By the rod of the Lord's wrath, he has driven me away and made me walk in darkness rather than light. Indeed, he has turned his hand against me again and again all day long. He has made my skin and my flesh grow old and has broken my bones. He has besieged me and surrounded me with bitterness and hardships. He has made me dwell in the darkness like those long dead. He has walled me in so I cannot escape. He has weighed me down with chains. Even when I call out or cry for help, he shuts out my prayer. He has barred my way with blocks of stone. He has made my paths crooked. Like a bear laying in wait, like a lion in hiding, he dragged me from the path and mangled me and left me without help. He drew his bow and made me the target for his arrows. He pierced my heart with arrows from his quiver. I became the laughingstock of all my people. They mock me in song all day long. He has filled me with bitter herbs and given me gall to drink. He has broken my teeth with gravel. He has trampled me in the dust. I have been deprived of peace. I have forgotten what prosperity is. So I say, my splendor is gone and all that I had hoped for from the Lord. I remember my affliction and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. I remember them well. And my soul is downcast within me. Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed. For his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I say to myself, the Lord is my portion. Therefore, I will wait for him. The Lord is good to those who hope in him, to the one who seeks him. It is good to wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. It is good for a man to bear the yoke while he is young. Let him sit alone in silence, for the Lord has laid it on him. Let him bury his face in the dust. There may yet be hope. Let him offer his cheek to one who would strike him, and let him be filled with disgrace. For no one is cast off by the Lord forever. Though he brings grief, he will show compassion. So great is his unfailing love. For he does not willingly bring affliction or grief to anyone. To crush underfoot all prisoners in the land, to deny people of their rights before the Most High, to deprive them of justice, would not the Lord see such things? Who can speak and have it happen if the Lord has not decreed it? It is not from the mouth of the Most High that both calamities and good things come. Why should the living complain when punished for their sins? Let us examine our ways and test them, and let us return to the Lord. Let us lift up our hearts and our hands to God in heaven and say, we have sinned and rebelled, and you have not forgiven. You have covered yourself with anger and pursued us. You have slain without pity. You have covered yourself with a cloud so that no prayer can get through. You have made us scum and refuse among the nations. All our enemies have opened their mouths wide against us. We have suffered terror and pitfall, ruin and destruction. Streams of tears flow from my eyes because my people are destroyed. My eyes will flow unceasingly without relief. Until the Lord looks down from heaven and sees. What I see brings grief to my soul because of all the women in my city. Those who were my enemies without cause hunted me like a bird. They tried to end my life in a pit, and they threw stones at me. The waters closed over my head and thought I was about to perish. I called on your name, Lord, from the depths of the pit. You heard my plea. Do not close your ears to my cry for relief. You came near when I called you, and you said, do not fear. You, Lord, took up my cause. You redeemed my life. Lord, you have seen the wrong done to me. Uphold my cause. You have seen the depths of their vengeance and all their plots against me. Lord, you have heard their insults, all of their plots against me. What my enemies whisper and mutter against me all day long. Look at them, sitting or standing. They mock me in their songs. Pay them back for what they deserve, Lord, and for what their hands have done. Put a veil over their hearts, and may your curse be on them. Pursue them in anger and destroy them from under the heavens of the Lord. You don't hear that very often in church because it's heavy. It's kind of a downer. I was also reading that while watching the Razorback football game yesterday, and it was very fitting. So,
I was lamenting yesterday.
There was lots of lament.
Yeah, so here's the thing. When you read through this, you're like, man, this guy's kind of bipolar because it's like out of one side of his mouth, he's talking, he's cursing God, and the other side of his mouth, he's praising God. And, you know, as I was reading it, I got to thinking about, like, we don't know how long it took him to write this, right? Like, the lament process that this guy is going through and the things that he's dealing with, you know, it didn't happen in an instant. Like, he didn't go from, you're breaking my teeth with gravel to, the Lord will rescue me overnight, right? This was a process, and this was his reflection of his process of going through lament for losing their city, losing their freedom, losing their ability to worship in the way they wanted to worship. And so here's the thing, that to me this speaks and says that God is not scared of our lament. He's not scared of when we challenge him or when we come against him or when we're upset. However, we can't stay upset forever. And I think that's where a lot of people turn away from Christianity, because something happens to them and they stay in that place of lament, but they don't know how to reconcile that with a good God. And so they never find their way out of their situation. And so there is a process that he takes us through in this chapter of Lamentations. We can see the process that this guy is going through as we go through it. And the reality is that lament is a form of worship. It's a form of worship to God, because worship isn't just about celebration and joy. There's a place for all of human emotion in worship. Our sadness, our tears, our anger, all of these emotions that God freely gave to us have a place in his worship, because he has created us to be like him. And so when we are worshiping him in those different ways, then we're actually bringing joy to him. You see, lament is passionately expressing your pain, your suffering, your grief, and your doubt, and your fear to God. And by crying out to God in the darkness, we show him that we trust him to be the light so that we can find our way out of it.
So in times of distress, what do people look for hope? Light. Like, you think about the purpose of a lighthouse, it's to be a beacon to guide ships away from danger. It's a warning. A beacon is often a sign of hope, of come to me, like this is where you're going to find safety. If you're in a crisis situation, if you're lost somewhere, you fire up a flare, which is a light, to let people know where you are. It's a sign of cry for help. See, in darkness, we look to light to find hope. In our lament, we're looking to God as our hope and light to guide us through the darkness, to guide us through the chaos, to help us find that peace that we're looking for. So it's important that we learn how to lament. Now, this isn't something that I was ever taught. This isn't something that usually is taught, because it's kind of a downer, and we have a beautiful rainy day here, and it's dark, and it's like, it's kind of this ominous sort of feeling today. So thanks God for setting the atmosphere. It's important to learn how to lament, because sometimes you can push through and you can push through and you can push through, but then there's a breaking point. Isn't it better to learn to just sit in your lament for a time, to face those feelings, to face those emotions, to face what's bothering you, to face the situation and know that there is nothing that you or anyone else can do to fix it. You've got nothing left. There's nothing left of you or anyone else that can make the situation better. But there's still hope, because we can still look and we can still find the light of God, the hope that He provides for us. But it's scary to sit in that darkness and look for the light. So we're going to talk about some steps that we can take when our life isn't perfect. Is there anyone out here that feels like your life is just perfect right now? Okay, Ryland's life is perfect.
Yes, it is. Almost.
But see, we want you to understand that these steps have no timeline. We're not setting a time frame like step one takes 2 days, step three takes 2 weeks. Like, it's nothing like that, because every situation's different. Every cycle of chaos is unique. So it's not a 6-week process to perfect mental health or physical health. And it's not a process that you will take a personal journey, and it might be 3 days. It might be 40 years. It might be something that you deal with for your entire life. But it's learning how to find God in those moments. Because when peace, we talked about this before, I think during the Fruit of the Spirit series, but when joy and sadness learn how to coexist, that's where you find peace.
Yeah. In this process, it's going to be a personal journey. And like she said, it might take 3 days to get through it. It might take 40 years to get through it. Scripture shows us both, right? It shows us this process in different ways. And if you want to go ahead and open your Bibles, if you have them, to Psalms 13, David, the author of Psalms, of course, you all know the story of David growing up, and he went through all of these trials and tribulations and hardships as a kid, which continued on into him being the king. And he had many situations where things didn't go the way that he wanted them to go. And in reality, David himself was not perfect, and it was by far, he was not perfect. However, because he was not perfect, it helps us to understand what we should do when things aren't perfect, right? Because we get this wonderful example of from Jesus of like how to live a good life and how to live on target and how to be like Christ. But the reason that there's all these other stories in Scripture that we see is because God knows we're not going to be perfect. And so in the imperfection of those in Scripture, we can learn what to do when we're walking through some of these processes. And so the first step is this. It's to turn to God. Turning to God. Whenever we are in lament, we have to turn to God. Because there's a million other things out there that we could turn to, right? We can turn to our addictions. We can turn to self-harm. We can turn to we can turn to bad friend groups, right? There's a lot of things we can turn to, but the thing that we have to do is turn to God. When I was working for Arvest, my manager would always tell me, like, if you're upset or you're angry about something that happens here, don't tell your coworkers or the people who are underneath you. Don't tell them about it. Come straight to me and tell me about it, because I'm here to listen and I want to fix whatever's broken, right? And the reason that she wanted me to come to her rather than like going around and spreading it amongst the coworkers is that because she genuinely meant it. Like, if there was an issue, she would fix it. the last thing she wanted is 10 employees that are now upset about that rather than just having one employee upset about that, not to mention spreading rumors and lies about coworkers and other people too, right? And so it's the same thing when we're dealing with this lament. Like, it's great to have a friend that we can walk through this process with, but when we're talking about our complaints, we've got to complain up. And where do we complain up to? We complain up to God. We turn to God in those situations. And so in Psalms 13:1, David does, he's in lament, and he does, he turns to God. He says, "How long, O Lord, will you forget me? Forever? How long will you hide your face from me?" This is his statement to God. Like, God, I'm turning to you, but I don't see you anywhere, right? I don't see you in this process. Hey, God, I'm here. I'm turning to you. I'm here to deal with this situation. But where are you? God, where are you in this situation? What is going on, right? So step two is this. Cry out your complaint. Cry it out to God. In verse 2, he says, "How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me?" Okay. And so in this, we see that David he's crying out to God. He's asking him questions, right? He's saying, how long will I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart? How long am I going to sit in this process? How long do I have to lament? In step three, we make an appeal for God to hear and respond. In verse 3, it says, "Consider and answer me, O Lord my God. Light up my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death." And so here you see that David is making an appeal to God to hear and respond. Hey, God, answer me. Answer me. Answer my questions. Can you hear me? Answer my questions. Light up my eyes. Give me the answers that I'm seeking, or I'll sleep the sleep of death, right? He's being dramatic in that part of it. But sometimes in our lament, we are a little dramatic. I know I am sometimes. And then step four is to confess your trust. So once we've gone through this process, once we've made this appeal, we've cried out to God, we've turned to God, then we can confess our trust in him. Verse 5 says, "But I have trusted in your steadfast love. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation." You see, we all go through lament. We all go through tough situations. And in those tough situations, as we are dealing with these hardships and we're recognizing that God is there, that we can trust in him, that we can confess our trust to him, that we can put our trust in the Lord because he's done it over and over and over again. And the reality is that as we begin to confess our trust to him, that begins this process of turning our heart from lament into rejoicing. It takes that next step of turning our hearts towards him. And in reality, when we start confessing our trust in him, we start to remember all of the little things that he's done for us in the past. We begin to see some of those smaller things, some of those small victories that we've had before. A few weeks ago, I read you a quote from this book by Martin Luther King Jr. It's called "Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Community?" And I was reading it the other day. I ran across a couple of paragraphs that I thought were really interesting. The first one says this. It says, "First, the line of progress is never straight. For a period of movement may follow a straight line and then it encounters obstacles and the path bends. It's like curving around a mountain when you are approaching a city. Often it feels though you are moving backwards and you are losing sight of your goal. but in fact, you are moving ahead, and soon you'll be able to see the city again closer by. And in this process, he's talking about the movement of equal rights, of course. But if we're applying this to our own lives, it's the same thing we've been talking about this whole month, this idea of chaos and this idea of cycles. And the reality is the truth, right? As we are encountering these low moments, if we keep sight of the light, if we keep sight of and trust the process of what's going on, then by the time we come back around to that cycle, we are actually further down the path and closer to God than we ever were before. And so we're actually curving around and getting closer to God. The next paragraph that I wanted to read says this: a final victory is an accumulation of many short-term encounters. To lightly dismiss success because it does not usher in a complete order of justice is to fail to comprehend the process of achieving full victory. It underestimates the value of confrontation and dissolves the confidence born of a partial victory by which new efforts are powered. I love this because it's saying that sometimes when we're in lament and we are in these moments, we have these tiny little victories, these little small things that happen in our lives, but we dismiss them because it's not the final victory, right? Like we have these little tiny things that happen that are really, really good, and we're maybe excited for just a minute, but then the overarching problem hasn't been solved yet, and we just want that out of the way. But what he's saying is that those little small victories, as they begin to stack up, then it actually gives us the motivation or the courage to take the next step forward so that each step of that process, each step of the way, we're gaining momentum to achieve a final victory. But we can't dismiss those small moments, those small victories when we're going along the path. And so as we're confessing our trust to God, we have to look for those tiny little victories, because sometimes when we are in the chaos, it takes those small victories to propel us forward, to keep us actively moving forward so that we can achieve a final victory in the things that we're doing in our lives. And then at last, we've reached step four. We've put our trust in God, right? We've said, okay, God, I trust that you're going to achieve victory. When you get that final victory, or even in little partial victories, there's one more step that's really important for you to take, and it's this: tell your testimony. Tell your story. Why is that so important? The reason it's important is because you never know how your testimony will help someone else through the darkness. You never know how your story and your testimony will help someone walk out of the darkness that they are in the middle of right now. Because each and every one of us have had moments of sadness, moments of darkness, moments when we just don't know what to do or where to turn. But when we tell others that story, when we speak it out loud, it helps them to see that there is a path to move forward.
So along those lines, it's, you know, I look back to James a lot, and James tells us, consider it joy when you face trials and tribulations, because they produce endurance. And that endurance produces maturity. And as you grow in that, as you follow through in that, it doesn't mean that you're just like fixed. That you reach a certain point in your life that you're like, well, I've been through all these things, and so I'm at a certain point of maturity now. And so now I'm just going to sit back and I'm just going to coast through life and I'm just going to tell people what to do. See, there's a difference in sharing from a place of understanding than sharing from a place of, what's the word I'm looking for here? Boasting, yes, of a place of arrogance. Thank you, Roy. Good job. Give him a cookie. That was good. Sharing from a place of arrogance. Because there's a certain humility that comes with the maturity when you earn that maturity through perseverance, through trials. And James reminds us again in chapter 5, verse 10. He says, "Brothers and sisters, as an example of patience in the face of suffering, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. As you know, we count as blessed those who have persevered. You have heard of Job's perseverance and have seen what the Lord finally brought about. The Lord is full of compassion and mercy." See, he references Job, who's kind of the James 5, 10 and 11. See, Job is kind of he's at the pinnacle when we think of suffering. He's who we look to on, like, well, this is how we deal with things. And, you know, the first step was to basically vent up, tell God. Like, don't just complain to everyone, complain to God. That doesn't mean that you can't share and depend on each other. Because we have to be open with each other to not only be the light for others in their moments of suffering, but to allow them to be the lights in ours. But as we can learn from the story of Job, we have to be selective and wise in who we bring into that circle. Because we can't just openly share on, say, a social media platform and expect to get any better answers than Job got from his friends. Look to your brothers and sisters. Look to your family by choice. Because even though this is a small group of people, the stories in here, it's amazing. And we can learn from each other in that. See, your hardships are more inspiring to others than your perfection. And there's a reason why people respond on social media platforms to your pain more than your successes, because it's more relatable. Therefore, the light that you can shine is brighter than anything else. That's brighter than anything else is your imperfection of being vulnerable and being honest and letting God use you to be the light for others. When you show others the trials that you've walked through and the peace that you found in light of your imperfection, we can grow to be a better society. We can grow to be a better humanity. In 1 Peter, he writes, "But in your hearts revere Christ as Lord, and always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have, but do this with gentleness and respect." When we shine our light, when we show people why we have hope, even though it doesn't seem like we should, we do it not in an arrogant way, but in a humble, relatable way. See, lament is trusting God to be your guiding light through the darkness, the fear, the pain, the confusion, the doubt, suffering. It's all normal things that we're going to experience in the chaos of this broken world. But see, those feelings don't come from God. But he can guide us through them. It's okay to feel them. It's okay to feel the emotions of it. But allow God to lead us through that. We have to learn how to look for his light in our dark chaos.
In Colossians 3, 1 through 4, it says, "Since then you have been raised with Christ, set your hearts on things above, where Christ is seated as the right hand of God. Set your mind on things above, not on earthly things, for You died, and your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your light, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory. We're going to take a minute today, and Jared, you can come on back up. We're going to take a minute today, and we're going to do communion together. And what I want us to do is a little bit different. We are going to, we're going to play a song. And as we play a song today, and we have our juice and our bread. What I want us to do is I want us to actually like walk through the process of lament. Okay. So the first step was to turn to God. We all know how to do that. The second one is to cry out your complaint. And so what I want you to do is maybe like grab a piece of paper and write down that complaint, or just say it in your head, like actually do it and complain out to God. Cry out that complaint and then make an appeal for God to hear and respond to you. And then confess your trust to him. Put your trust in him. When you are to step four, when you have done that, when you say, God, I trust you through this process, that's when I want you to partake in communion. Because communion is our connection to God. It is a remembrance of Jesus and the sacrifice that he made so that you and I can have this process to walk through salvation. And so by taking communion today, when you take communion, you are actually saying, God, I trust you in the midst of the chaos, in the midst of everything that's going on. God, I trust you. So as we sing this song, take a minute, write something down, cry out to God, take a moment to hear from him. And then when you're ready to put your trust in him, that he's going to walk you through that process, no matter what the thing is, no matter what the pain is, no matter what the hurt is, when you're ready to take that step, then take communion. If you need prayer today, pray with each other. You guys can sit during this time. You can stand and worship, just however you feel comfortable. But take just a few minutes. Connect with God. Hear him. Trust him. And do communion.